This is On the Ground Ipsy on 89.1 WEMU. I'm Patrick Campion, and we are your community NPR station. And this is a time each week where we really focus on that word, community. And we are so proud to be part of the Ypsilanti community. We jumped at the chance 18 months ago to be a part of this On the Ground Ipsy project with Concentrate Media. We are the proud media partner of it. And the person out in the community, the embedded reporter, the project manager, what's your official title, Sarah?
Project manager.
See, I got it right. I always like you know, project editor, project manager. Sarah Rigg is with us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning.
And concentratemedia.com, concentrate A2.
On Twitter.
On Twitter, and concentrate media
everywhere else.
Okay, we've got that straight. After a year and a half, I finally got that straight. And of course, you can find everything we talk about and the links to the great articles that Sarah puts together and other good work too at WEMU.org. That's our website. I had to struggle to remember that one for a moment. What are we talking about this week?
So there is an organization in Ypsilanti that a lot of people don't know exists, or they've seen the building and don't know what's in there, called High Scope. And it's an education, early childhood education research organization. And I have brought Executive Vice President Dr. Ben Edmondson and Shannon Lockhart, who is the Early Childhood Applied Practice Manager.
And Shannon, you fit all that on a business card, huh?
They do now.
All right. Well, you know, this is interesting to me because we talked a little bit before we jumped into the recording here about where you're located. So let's start with first, I think a lot of people might be familiar with the building you're in Ypsilanti. So tell us a little bit about that, just to make sure people kind of visualize where you're at in the city.
The Hutchinson Mansion is up on River Street, down past Cross, the depot town. And it is the old S&H Green Stamps. Shelley Hutchinson was the one that actually built the house based on the S&H Green Stamps many years ago, the money that he got from that.
And you told me you've been there since the 70s. Well, not you personally,
no.
But High Scope has been there since the 70s.
Yeah, Dr. Weikart purchased the house.
And I think anybody that's been around Ipsy for a while would definitely recognize that building. You might not be seeing it in your head right now, but I'm sure you've driven by it and gone, wow, I wonder what's in there. And the answer is High Scope. And Shannon and Dr. Ben, good morning, Dr. Ben.
Good morning.
We're just kind of in the habit of calling you that from your YCS days.
I'm just waking up.
So this is where you ended up after you left YCS. This is your new work here. So we're happy to have both of you here
Thank you.
To talk about High Scope this morning. So who wants to give me the kind of 30,000-foot view? Maybe, Shannon, you've been there, you said, over 30 years now. So why don't you give me the 30,000-foot view of what is High Scope's mission? What do they do?
High Scope is a nonprofit organization where we provide curriculum and training for teachers from birth to five.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And so I'm not in education. What does that mean?
That means that we have our own curriculum that we've developed based on the Perry Preschool Project, which is a longitudinal study, which Ben can actually talk a lot more about, too. And from there, we have developed this curriculum, and we provide that as well as training across the United States and into other countries.
And this training you're providing, is it to public schools, private schools? I mean, what kind of... Anyone?
All types of programs, for-profit, non-profit, Head Start, public school preschools, family child care homes. We have an infant toddler curriculum as well.
And just to not get into the weeds too much, but I think words we've heard a lot about education standards, a common core standard across the United States. A lot of states have chosen to adopt that standard. How does the work you do differentiate from what many of us might be familiar with kids in public school?
Actually, our curriculum and our content align with the Common
okay.
Core as well.
So this is an adaptation of the Common Core standard, but using different research tools and different studies, you're putting a very specific educational program together that then you train people how to implement.
And High Scope is grounded in research. That's why it's called the High Scope Educational Research Foundation.
And so, just can you name drop some clients? I mean, some big school districts or individuals we might know about? Somebody, just out of curiosity, anybody in our community using these tools that you're developing?
The Ypsilanti Head Start used to be, I don't know if they're currently using the curriculum. We have a lot of programs, even Washtenaw Community College. They actually use the curriculum as a way of just introducing their teachers into the curriculum. Other programs, family child care homes that we've worked with, as well. So it just depends on the program. And
I'll give you a big one. Yeah, DPSCD.
Okay, all right.
Big
all right.
one.
All right.
Well, it's Detroit. He said IPSC. So.
No, he said around here.
Around
so,
here.
So, I mean, yeah, so I, can name I understand that, yeah, yeah. but.
So there's Wayne yeah. Risa. I mean, yeah, Downriver, yeah, okay. a lot of programs.
Right. Now right. she's energized.
Yeah, she's, yeah.
yeah. You said IPSC. IPSC.
He didn't say IPSC.
I said our community. Right. That's okay. She's right. You know what? Hey, we can all be right. That's the voice of Dr. Ben Edmondson.
I love Shannon.
Yeah, you've heard him before on WEMU. Thank you so much for coming in this morning, too. Well, let's go to you, Dr. Ben. You've only been there a few months now, right?
Yes, I have.
All right. So what attracted you to HiSCOPE, first off, and what are you doing there?
Well, boy, I'm very honest and open around here, but, you know, it was a very good offer. Somebody that sought my expertise, which was great. And
it's nice to be wanted, isn't it?
It really is. Yeah. It really is. So, I mean, I guess the thing that I would say is I would love to say that, oh, they sought me out because I was this and that. One of the things I am is a transformational leader. When I was approached, I'm certain that they knew of that. And when you're looking for ways to, you know, rebrand, re-energize, there's certain people that I think you would want on your team. And seemingly it was me. One of the things that I look at, and I was guilty of, is there's this big disconnect between public schools and early childhood work. And I would often do it. I'm ashamed to say it now, but I would be like, oh, that's not in my wheelhouse. You know, I'm pre-K to 12, or usually I say I'm K to 12. Mm-hmm. Totally ignoring the work, the hard work that people do, the energy that they put into it, the passion that they put into early childhood. Early childhood, as I say, often determine outcomes. I mean, early. I mean, that right. sounds redundant, but
right,
early.
Starting on the right path.
Yeah.
Right. So, when you were at YCS as the superintendent, were you aware of the work that HiSCOPE was doing?
Oh, I was, because not necessarily because of the work that I did at YCS, but my dissertation was about had a little bit of HiSCOPE in it.
Okay. All right. And, so this is something you've been looking at or working with your entire time. You've been looking at becoming a leader in education.
Yeah. If you are a leader in education, I don't understand how you couldn't know who HiSCOPE is. It's okay. It's one of the organizations that has made such an impact on early childhood outcomes. I guess that would be the best thing I could say. But there's a lot of people that don't know what HiSCOPE is.
All right, Shannon, just between you and me, let's ignore Dr. Ben for a second. You know, he's been there a few months now. Has he made an impact with the work that you're doing?
Oh, I think so, okay. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. Right. In terms of actually revitalizing.
You can wink and tack the table once. No, we were excited to hear that this person we would be happy to work with as a leader in our community was making a transition but staying in education, because we know his passion. He's very open about it, and we see it and we hear it, and we've experienced it here.
That's humbling.
So, you know, we were excited to hear that he was jumping over this organization that we didn't, frankly, know that much about. So this is a good opportunity to explore the work being done there. You mentioned, Shannon, I think you told me before we were recording, you've been there a little over 30 years or 30-ish years. What have you done during that time? I mean, 30 years is an eternity in education. I mean, I'm sure standards have changed a dozen times in that time. And, you know, the concentration of it changed? Or have you really kind of just stayed the path and been working hard at getting kids on a great path to begin with?
Well, when I first came, I was in the research department.
Okay.
So that I spent a good 10, 12 years in the research department and then moved more into the early childhood. And my main and back then, you know, research was thriving, and we're still thriving as well. But it was more along the lines of doing a lot of Head Start research. Mm-hmm. The Perry Preschool Project was still being done in age 23, age 40, you know, all of those 30 and on up. And it's currently at the age 50, which is going to be announced pretty soon. But a lot of our work affected the results of Head Start and continuing Head Start. I personally worked on a project called the international project called the IEA Pre-Primary Project, and we looked at the quality of life for 4-year-olds in 15 countries.
All right. So how are you? When you mentioned research, I mean, what kind of research specifically are you doing? Is this like observational research? Or are you cataloging educational outcomes? Are you cataloging individual, mm-hmm. You know, life outcomes? You mentioned, you know, the long-term study that's now approaching. You know, people are getting to mm-hmm. 50 years old. I mean, what are you looking for?
Perry's study was actually the one that kind of set the tone for the longitudinal pieces, and then HiSCOPE has carried that on in other projects where the international study was a 3-phase, and we followed children from age 4 to age 7. to really look at what the early effects were on their school formal schooling. And that was a little slightly different because internationally, children start formal schooling at different ages. So we're into our first grade when Finland is just starting. You know, so we had to look at things at a different perspective. We've developed observation-based instruments like the child observation record, and we've continued to increase that across. We both look at qualitative as well as quantitative research. So it depends on what it is that we're looking at. We've had federal grants. We've had private grants. We've had state-level grants. We're currently involved in looking at the quality research or quality rating system in the state of Michigan, and the results of that. How is that working in the state of Michigan?
So I got a research question for you, Dr. Ben. What's been some shocking things, or just things that have stuck out for you? I mean, now that you're working directly for HighScope, out of working directly in an educational district, what are some things to you that you're seeing that stand out that maybe based on the work or starting children with this work and continuing through, or you know, just some things you're seeing? What are things that really are grabbing onto you that are highlighting the success of partnering with programs like HighScope?
What a great question. I would say...
Well, thank you.
Yeah, no, that's well thought out. The biggest... It's more of a problem for me, knowing that there are curricula out there that address parental engagement, and there's infant-toddler work. There's a lot of these studies that are out there. There's a lot of work that HighScope does that supports that work.
So you're seeing a need for almost an evangelize.
Yes,
the work is here. The research is done. The programs are put together. I mean, not done. It's ongoing, but the programs are put together. There's these great quality things, and they're just not being used.
And there's the disconnect.
Okay.
What I find, it's a little bit sad to me. All the great work that people do in early childhood doesn't seem to move forward when it gets to public school. And I'll just give you an example. So somebody is engaged in high school curricula for 2 years, child. Then they go to the public school and it's just the kid arrives with, there's nothing that's, you know, that arrives with them but a birth certificate. Mm-hmm. So as a teacher, I'm sitting there thinking like, well, who is this kid? Not knowing all the work and, you know, all the research that has gone into, you know, preparing that child. That's where I struggle. And, you know, I bring that to HighScope. When we sit down, we talk about some things. I give the public school perspective mm-hmm. and ways that we can interact. So one of the things that we've done is we invited educators, kindergarten educators from YCS, as a matter of fact, to sit and talk mm-hmm. to us. And let's have this conversation, because lots of times you don't. And again, I start with myself. I was guilty. I'm like, that's not in my wheelhouse. Well, then whose is it? Right. I mean, if you really think about it, who's responsible for having this dialogue, making certain that our kids, you know, have, if they've been exposed, how do we keep that going? And that's a struggle for me. It is. It gets me up every day. Like,
what's preventing, and for public schools specifically, what's preventing districts or schools individually from implementing these sorts of things? Is it a funding thing? Is it an education thing?
I think it's just a collaboration issue.
Okay.
Because we've tried before, but it just wasn't as welcomed. And I think if we opened the avenue on both sides and that we could learn from both sides, then we might be able to collaborate better and make that transition smoother.
And let me give that example. So I reached out to the principal and a teacher and another teacher, and they all came. I had a relationship mm-hmm. to be able to do that. So there's some legitimacy in the relationship, which got them to us. And I think sometimes if you don't know someone and then they send you an email, it's like, who are these people? Or it's the relationship.
What are you selling
right?
me? Yeah, right.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And then it's the relationship that got us there. We weren't selling anything. We wanted to hear their experiences. Right. We wanted to tell them what we're doing. In the public school end, though, you have a lot of pressure making certain that kids can read by a certain level. There's this tremendous pressure to assess. If you don't assess, then there's a problem. Well, let's find out what they're doing in early childhood to see if kids are ready. And, you know, there's something to be said about play. You know, there's something good to be said about play. But in public school, we can't have play. Mm-hmm. What are those kids doing? They have to be able to read, not understanding that
the child.
One can serve the other.
Right.
Yeah,
the
one
child goal can serve the piece.
Shannon, from your experience, I mean, you've been doing this for a while now. Do you find that these types of conversations are more difficult, simply just born out of the fact that there's larger classroom sizes, there's fundamentally less resources, especially human resources, in most school districts across the country? Are these conversations getting more difficult because people simply just don't have the time to spend to invest in change?
Time is part of it, but I think it's requirements. Teachers are under the pressure on getting the requirements in. So when they take a look back and they're like, well, we can't facilitate play when we have these requirements to do. So I think if we could collaborate and work together and show them how they can incorporate that in and still be able to do it successfully, I think that would be a good connection.
Yeah, so a little bit of extra work in the beginning, and what you end up with is a situation that ends up not being more work, but more effective work. Mm-hmm.
I'll give you another example that we were contacted by the governor's office through a third party that we work with. It was asking for ways to promote early childhood in her administration. So we gave some suggestions on how to do that. I think it takes some intervention at the state level to get some of this stuff, as Shannon said, requirements. Teachers have requirements, but maybe we need to require that public ed and early childhood centers work together. And I think there is this, I mean, it feels treasonous to say it, but there's a little bit of disrespect that I think K-12 educators have toward early childhood.
That's why I didn't say anything. Okay. I'm glad it came from you and not
me. Yeah, it came from me. There's a little bit of disrespect, and there's pay discrepancies.
I can give you a little anecdotal, because my one child was born in Minnesota, so the first couple of years of his life in Minnesota. Early childhood education viewed very differently there in their public schools, where that my kid was in a private preschool, but a teacher noticed some issues, and immediately the state jumped in. Testing, offers for free preschool, offers for integrative school learning, you know, busing, all these things, occupational therapy. At age 4, they're right there on top of that, knowing that the better that they start this kid with his academic career, the better the outcomes are going to be. So they started, and you know, obviously special needs are very different than the conversation, but it's the same kind of attitude of, we got to get these kids started at 3 and 4, not 5, 6, 7, because you've lost time. And if you don't have that well guided. So I'm asking a very verbose, long-winded question, but I think I see what you're getting at, that some of these standards are there to start at kindergarten or first grade, when you're saying, maybe let's start earlier, and maybe then we're going to get better outcomes later on down the road.
But there's key learning that's going on from birth to 5, mm-hmm. birth to 8, really.
Yeah.
And especially on the brain development, executive function skills, self-regulation.
I knew it was coming.
All of those,
I knew executive function was coming.
Key skills that children need to learn. And they're already set by the time they get into kindergarten.
Sure. And when we're moving out of the industrial age into the information age, it's fundamentally impacting the role of education in our lives. Family structures are changing. Mm-hmm. You know, there's less, much less of a likelihood that there will be an adult in the home all the time. So we're putting our kids in the hands of people from sometimes the age of 2 weeks forward. It sounds like the work that you're doing is trying to structure the learning environment to guarantee better outcomes down the road from the moment you start learning.
Trying to really increase the quality of experiences that children get at the young age so that they can be prepared and successful in school, but also in life.
So you mentioned a little work you're doing with WCC. Are you working with other people that are educating educators too, like Eastern Michigan and other schools that are trying to create the next generation of public educators?
We have actually been asked as guest speakers to come in and speak in various early childhood classes and courses. We've worked with Karen Pasorek and her other colleagues as well in their department. They've come to us in seeking understanding and knowledge as well in terms of evaluating programs and
Do you see that same divide that you see that you talked about, Dr. Ben, with K-12 versus early ed? Early childhood education opportunities, do you see that in those that are educating, especially educating leaders, future leaders, education leadership, like doctorate type programs? Do you see that they view what you're doing as not as essential as the K-12 experience?
I actually can't answer that one. I don't know.
Okay.
There's a lot of programs out that are becoming very strong in producing strong leaders in terms of early childhood. Of course, there's the CDA training, and other types of field degrees and that. But there are bachelor's degrees. There's associates, bachelor's, master level, and as well as PhDs.
All in early childhood education.
And I think from when I was in school, they've come a long way in terms of really targeting what do you need to follow instead of a mishmash of different degrees and different.
Well, and we've seen the evolution. I think, you know, you're right. From the time I went to school to now, you know, there was no kindergarten program anywhere now, and it's so common. And now many school districts are going to a pre-K as an offering. You know, when my kids were little, there was a half-day kindergarten option that you had to pay for in order to get the. Mm-hmm. So now it's just integrated into the rest of the K-12 curriculum. So
one of the recommendations that we gave to the governor is that you need to expand what is mandatory and what isn't. Because if something is mandatory, or if it's not, you have some kids that can be exposed to it because their parents can maybe afford it.
Well, get ready for a prolonged and vociferous argument from people that don't like that on either side of that. You can't force people to put their kids in school.
I'd love to be at the table.
But don't hold me accountable for the outcomes.
Yeah.
We want to make sure that those pre-K programs are still consistent with early childhood and not pushing that grade level down on them.
No play.
Yeah.
So if people want to learn more about HiSCOPE, the work you do, or even offer, you know, help to see how they can get involved, how do we find you?
HiSCOPE.org would be one,
easy.
Or
just take a walk on.
I'm around Ipsy. Just come on and visit. I mean, I don't have any problem with that. I'd love, and that's one of the things that I'm trying to do is bring it more of an outreach to Ipsilanti, mm-hmm. because I just go on my own experiences that I didn't feel HiSCOPE around me. It was there. I'm not blaming, but we need to do a little bit more outreach on our end. So we're showing up at different events and now being a little bit more public.
Out of curiosity, do you publish the research you're doing if people wanted to take? I mean, because I know we have a lot of scholars in our audience that might be curious about seeing some of the things. So it's publicly available.
Oh, absolutely.
All right,
you can't keep that stuff to yourself.
We do have a demonstration classroom.
Okay.
And so we provide slots open for GSRP, which is the Great Student mm-hmm. Readiness Program, as well as tuition-based. And we're looking into expanding that at some
point
down the line.
Look at that.
So
HiSCOPE.org, if any of that sounds appealing to you, you got younger kids, or if you're an educator yourself, or you're just interested in the work they're doing or how to support it, HiSCOPE.org sounds like the place.
You could drive by 600 North River like I did every day, and I said, man, that's a big house. I wonder what they do over there. Well, stop by. You can't miss it.
It is right there, and it takes up a quarter of a city block, but it is a gorgeous building. And I'm actually, you know, from a historical preservation aspect, too, I think it's neat that you guys stay there and keep up with the building. It is a hallmark of the history of Ipsilanti.
We have lots of stories we can tell. Ghost as well.
You know, maybe in a future segment, around October, we'll take a little tour, and you can show us the haunted corners of the building.
On another note, I'm impressed with your preparation. I don't know how much you prepared for this interview, but it's very impressive. Yeah. I'm like, this guy is the real deal.
I did a little bit. I did a little bit of research.
That was good, though.
Yeah.
Hi,
Sarah.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Thanks.
Thanks for bringing these two in this morning. Can you tell I'm interested in this topic?
Yeah, I can tell.
All right. What do we got going on for next week? You got a plan? You mentioned you were out on Valentine's Day.
I was. I was at the Underground at Riverside Art Center's off-center venue. Ward Run Production puts on what they call a youth music venue. It's mostly hip-hop, but they're really open to any genre there. They've had slam poets and stuff, so they just open it up to young people 16 to 24. To come and hone their craft there. So that's what my story is going to be about next week.
All right, we'll look forward to chatting with you next week. And Sarah, thanks again for all the great work you do in our community. I'm assuming we got some good pictures from Doug again. If you haven't seen the Hutchinson Mansion where HiSCOPE's located, you could probably get some good
pictures
of it. Dr. Ben's smiling face probably too, I bet. You know, you can't resist the camera. But thank you so much for being here again. This is On the Ground Ipsy on 89.1 WEMU FM and HD1 Ipsilanti.